Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. And in today's episode, we are going to discuss more about motivation. Now, we did an episode about motivation a long time ago. It was actually one of our earlier episodes, episode number 15. So if you're interested in watching or listening to that, or maybe reviewing it, you know, I'd encourage you to do so. Definitely, you know, this is a standalone episode, so not something where you need to listen to it. But if after listening to today's episode, you know, maybe if you want a little bit more, or us to maybe, you know, if you want to hear us take on this topic in a slightly different perspective, certainly you could check out episode number 15. And in that episode, we talked a little bit about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. We detailed a bit about self-determination theory, and then we discussed each of our origin stories in that first episode. And for today, we're going to take a different approach. We're going to discuss what are some of the challenges of motivation, what can get in athletes' ways of being motivated and sustaining that motivation over time. And then we're also going to discuss some different approaches that athletes can take to maybe be clear about what their reasons and purpose and why are for playing, and also discuss some interventions that athletes can utilize in order to build that motivation over time.
And this topic to me is timely, Josh, because I've had a few athletes recently present with different maybe challenges with motivation. And you mentioned one about kind of the why, you know, and one of the ones that seemed more present recently is this idea of why I'm playing, you know, what's the purpose, or maybe I have a goal, but it's not as important to me to the point where I'm going to be training intensely every day. So sometimes a player may report being able to be intense for a few days and then having a drop. And it just seems that the level of importance of why they want to achieve something isn't quite connected strongly enough. And so that's been one. And then I think another aspect of why certain players are struggling with motivation may be just the different sources. You mentioned intrinsic, extrinsic. Yeah, there are certainly other ones in between there within self-determination theory. But sometimes players are a little bit too reliant on more external sources of motivation, maybe coaches trying to inject energy, maybe parents trying to inject energy or expectations or rewards or punishments. And those sources of motivation tend to only have a short-term impact. I mean, it could be a set period of time, but over time, they tend to lose their power. And so I think there are a number of different ways of looking at these things. So what are some, you know, issues that you're seeing with motivation for certain athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest is sort of this milestone approach where maybe an athlete is focused on a particular milestone. So maybe it's a high school athlete and they're focused on their county tournament for their high school team or their state tournament, or maybe it's for an adult player and they're they're focused on regionals or state or nationals or whatever it may be. And, you know, and then I think when somebody maybe is overly focused on that, or when that becomes their primary goal, what happens next can be unclear, where it's, okay, if I've been so focused on, you know, USTA nationals, you know, in a, for my USTA adult league team, if I'm so focused on that, and that's what I've been thinking about for months, and I've been focusing on that, and I have big goals around that, what happens after that? I think for a lot of, I think a lot of athletes struggle with that, where that's been the focus, and they don't necessarily know what comes next. And I think maintaining motivation after a milestone like that can be a real challenge. And I think, you know, I think we want to be able to, you know, constantly be making adjustments, where our, you know, ideally our main goal is not just around that one event. It's okay, this is a milestone, or this is a nice test for myself, but this is, you know, this is after this test, I have another one and another one. And it's, you know, this is just one sort of bullet point along the way, one milestone along that journey, rather than this being the finish line. And this is something James Clear talks about in his book Atomic Habits, where, you know, he talks about wanting, you know, if within whatever we do, that the identity piece is, you know, really should come first, where it's, okay, if somebody wants to run a marathon, that running the marathon doesn't need to be the main thing that's being focused on. If it's all about running the marathon, then what happens after you run that marathon? Because then the goal has been achieved. Or if it's more about, I want to become a runner, I want to identify as a runner, then okay, what do? Runners run marathons. They might run a 5K. They might run other sorts of races. They run recreationally. They run in groups. They run for fun. And okay, that, you know, I've run the marathon, but that doesn't mean that things are over. That's an important milestone. That's certainly a, you know, quite a challenge, I think, for anybody. But, you know, just because I've done that does not mean that the journey is over. I mean, yeah, you know, it's not, and no pun intended here, but it's not a finish line. It simply is a milestone. And I think, you know, we can apply that same thing to tennis, certainly, where we want to be very careful not to make those milestones, so those individual milestones, too much of the overarching goal, where if it's, you know, whether it's the state tournament, or whether it's, you know, something for our team, or whether it's, I want to play college tennis, or whatever that goal is, we want to be very careful that doesn't overshadow maybe our bigger reasons for why we play tennis and why we do what we do.
Yeah. My guess is that most people listening have probably felt that. I have, where I had an overarching goal and then the question was, what's next? And for me, I kind of just like backed off and just like relaxed and maybe took some time off and then tried to figure out, well, what's the next thing? But where I think, you know, what you're talking about, we can get into that a little bit deeper when we start talking about some of the interventions to help. Yeah, if I had more of that identity piece and really connected with it more, I probably would have done something right away as opposed to that. So I think that is a big one. And my guess is most people struggle with that. And when most people are working on goal setting, very often they are those types of outcome goals, rankings, you know, like you said, making a state tournament or playing in that, whatever it may be. Very often when people talk about goal setting, that's what they're talking about. And I think it's a good issue to bring up, is like, there's more to it than that, right? So, you know, some other issues that we could deal with, Josh, in our discussion today, in terms of potential issues with motivation, could be being too results oriented. And, you know, as we've discussed many times in the past, tennis involves a lot of losing. That can be difficult to deal with, and you're not always going to get the wins. Your training environment, your motivational climate, could be thwarting some of your motivation in that. Perhaps where you are is a little bit too controlling, maybe too strict, too serious, or maybe coaches that you're working with are a little too critical, pointing out more negatives than positives. Those can be hits on motivation. Parents can certainly do that as well. Maybe parents are driving the process too much. Maybe they're too controlling of what is going on. Maybe their expectations are difficult to meet. What else here? Burnout can certainly be a hit to motivation. And I think one of the difficulties with tennis, as with, I think, all sports nowadays, because, I mean, sports have become business, not just, you know, recreation and a pursuit, is this notion of having to play 52 weeks out of the year. And, you know, a lot of tennis federations don't necessarily make room for an off season for players to take some time and recover mentally and physically. And so it becomes incumbent upon players and parents and so forth to and coaches to build in some of that into their schedule and not go through that fear of missing out on something in that time period. And so I think we could also talk a little bit about burnout. So let's transition a little bit, Josh, to some of the interventions that we could use here. And I like the one that we more or less started with, which was the why we play. Maybe this also connects with it would help with what's next type of personality, you know, or approach to goal setting. So when you think about helping a player connect with tennis, why they play, what might that process look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some deeper work that can be done. And I think that can look different ways. I think it can be a combination of factors, but I think being able to really try to almost define that purpose or search for it, and try to think, you know, really why do I do what I do? And I think sometimes when somebody's asked that question, it starts, you know, maybe their initial answer starts at more of a superficial level, more of a basic level. But I think once you can sort of peel back the layers a little bit, it can become a little bit clearer in terms of, you know, in terms of why. And I think, you know, maybe somebody at first they say, oh, I do it because tennis is fun or because I want to win. And it's like, okay, that's great. Those can be a part of it. But, you know, but really why are those things important to you? And I think, you know, one exercise you can do is, I think it's, you know, been referred to as sort of the five whys. And it's like, okay, you know, can you give sort of that initial reason? Okay, why am I doing this? Why do I play tennis? Because I want to win. Okay, but why is that important? Well, because, you know, maybe growing up, I didn't win as much and I played some of these other sports. Okay, so then, you know, why? And sort of be able to try to distill it a little bit more through that questioning. And that's something that, you know, that you could do with a sports psychology professional or something, you know, independent as well. Just be able to sort of ask yourself some of those questions in terms of, you know, why is this meaningful? Why is this important to you? And I think, yeah, being able to distill that and try to be a little bit clearer about some of those reasons. And, you know, oftentimes it takes time. It takes time to really figure out what those are. But I think once we can get to the point, and, you know, I think oftentimes it has more to do with, you know, maybe the way we were brought up or early experiences with tennis or with other sports or with other activities. And I think, you know, oftentimes, yeah, once we can get to that point of making that purpose a little bit clearer, then I think things start to get a lot easier, because I think, you know, it's easier to make decisions around our sport, around our habits. You know, I think it can almost be seen as a filter where we can start to use that why, that purpose as a filter for why we do, for, you know, certain decisions that we make on a daily basis, for, you know, for how we want to train, for what sorts of events we want to sign up for, you know, maybe when we choose what some of those milestones are on our journey, you know, I think it's a lot easier to maybe determine some of those things once we've put in that work and really figured out, you know, what that purpose is. And I think, you know, when I think of this as well, I think of certain professional athletes and, you know, really elite athletes like Kobe Bryant, for instance, comes to mind, where if you hear Kobe Bryant or, you know, Tom Brady or maybe a Serena Williams or, you know, some of these different people who have obviously achieved, you know, as much success as anybody. But when you hear them talk about their sport and their reason why, there's not a lot of contemplation. They're able to come to their answers, I think, pretty quickly and pretty clearly because they've done the work, because they've thought these things through, because they have clear reasons for why they're doing things. And then I think on a daily basis, it's more about that execution process. And now, are there times where they reevaluate things and where they maybe go back to some of these, you know, questions and maybe have certain doubts? I'm sure, yes. However, I think, you know, with these, you know, with athletes who have played for longer, who have maybe achieved more, it can be a little bit easier to have put in that time and put in that work of distilling these things so that, you know, at a certain point, it is, you know, it's just more about that execution process.
You mentioned James Clear and the identity piece earlier. Do you work in that particular phase when you're helping a player with motivation? Do you work on them creating an identity, like maybe choosing something? And if so, like, what are some examples of things that people have chosen?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I think we definitely discussed the identity piece. But I mean, I think it, you know, when it comes to the identity piece for, you know, for some people, it can almost be like an alter ego where, you know, if I'm seeing myself in a certain way, you know, can I sort of choose that alter ego? Can I sort of choose maybe a different way that I want to be when I'm out there performing or even during practice? But I think, you know, when it comes to identity, I think you actually phrase that in an interesting way, sort of like choosing that identity. I definitely do work with people in terms of trying to maybe uncover a little bit more about sort of their identity and how they see themselves within their sport, how their sport fits into their bigger, you know, their whole life, that sort of thing. But I think, I think it's a lot about how, you know, can we figure out a little bit more about sort of our identity or maybe multiple identities. And then once that's clear, once that purpose is clear, then we can start to sort of fill in the pieces and make some of these, you know, other sorts of decisions, you know, rather than having to go back to some of those earlier things like that identity piece and that purpose piece and, you know, constantly needing to question it. How do you approach identity?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you mentioned the alter ego. We talked to Coleman Gearhart about alter ego and for him, and also with respect to Deion Sanders and Primetime. I think it is a good way. What's that?
It's a go Buffs.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to a game soon, so I know you're gonna.
Yes, next on November 11th.
Yeah. So I think it is an interesting way to begin to overcome that potential issue with, hey, I've achieved X goal, what's next? And like you said, all right, if I'm identifying as something, well then, like as a runner, then I run. And so, you know, maybe it needs to be stronger than just a tennis player. But I think choosing something like that is an interesting way of looking at it. I'd like to get into more of the questions that help get to the why as well, but I think that's a good part of it. And I was introduced to an exercise called the Carpe Diem exercise, right? Kind of a seize the day, pluck the day, from Brian Johnson. So Brian Johnson runs a program called Heroic or Arete. He used to run Philosopher's Notes. And so the Carpe Diem exercise, it's really broken into different aspects of your life, but we could just choose one in which you select an identity, you come up with an identity, then you choose the important virtues and values of that identity, and then you then select the behaviors of those virtues, right? How do you embody that? And the idea is to do the exercise daily so that, you know, what may change, the identity and the values and the virtues may not change so much, but the behaviors will probably change day to day. And it gives you more of an intention about how to create a great day, right? Similar to Eric Buderak's TEDx talk, we want to create more great days. Brian Johnson talks about creating masterpiece days. So what could be an identity that we choose? And I've done this with some of the players that I work with. And I just throw this out there as not necessarily that you want to be a professional tennis player, but could that just be how you behave on a daily basis? Could you identify as a professional tennis player? And we'll just say, take that for an example. So let's say you do. Let's say you identify as, I'm going to be professional in how I go about my training. So what are the virtues and values of a professional tennis player? And that doesn't mean you're taking money, right? Somebody who's professional, because professionals really care about what they do, right? Amateurs, even though it means you love your sport, you know, if I were to call you an amateur, Josh, you would probably take offense to that. And that's just the way it is, right? So we want to be professional, right? So what are the values and virtues of professional? And we all may have different takes on that, but they could be things like disciplined, committed, yep, having purpose, focused, confident, et cetera, right? There might be different virtues and values that you would have. Now, based on that, how do you embody those virtues and values today? And it might be around, all right, well, today I'm going to practice with a lot of intensity. I'm going to do my workout. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to make sure that my eating is on point. I'm going to hydrate well. I'm going to take care of my sleep habits. And it may lead you to looking at the day ahead and set some real intention around that. I do this exercise every day, and it's really helpful, especially in the areas in which I am not quite as strong in. And so it makes me, you know, want to create a great day by doing some of these behaviors around virtues and values that I think are important to being the person that I want to be. So I think that when we look at that identity piece, it's something we could all do. And it doesn't have to be professional tennis player. It could be something lesser, or, you know, not lesser, but just different. It could be, you know, great tennis player, great athlete, professional athlete, whatever that is. Think of something that would help you get through that what's next piece that allows you, because I think those types of outcome goals, which, you know, I think we've talked about this before, Josh, like that's a little bit of a mistake in the goal setting process to make that your driving goal. There should be a higher purpose. And maybe it's around when we talked self-determination theory in the past, we probably talked about the basic psychological need of mastery and competence. Very often that should be the overarching purpose of what we're doing. And that's where the identity can come in and really connect you with that piece. So I'm just going to stop there and see what your thoughts are on that.
I like that. I like that approach. I mean, you know, I think other identities are, you know, if I identify as a mentally tough tennis player,
yeah,
then what does that look like? What does that look like in terms of what I do on court during a match? What does that look like in terms of how I practice? What does that look like in terms of my lifestyle and other habits in my life in terms of, you know, what I can do to support that identity? You know, maybe I am trying to really focus more on really battling and really, you know, maybe that identity is I'm trying to be a warrior, out there, trying to fight for every point. So, okay, if that's my identity, what can I do? You know, how can I sort of start to fill in the pieces to make that happen, right? So whether that is, you know, what do I do in between points? How do I talk to myself to best reinforce that identity? So I think it really is an important question this identity piece. And I think it's, you know, and we all have agency. We have choice in terms of how we, you know, decide what that identity is going to be. And then, you know, and then we can start to fill in some of these other pieces in terms of, you know, in terms of maybe the bigger picture things and also the smaller details that help to reinforce that identity.
Yeah. To be clear, some of the players I've worked with have chosen exactly warrior and fighter as identities. Yep. You know, for whatever reason, the professional piece didn't connect with them, but this is how they wanted to be. So I think that's great. I think once you have that, and once you have this sort of, you've gone through some of the deeper work about why, I think one of the good questions to throw into that deep work is, what is my definition of success? You know, especially in this realm. And I think we've talked about the John Wooden definition, because I'll often ask players what their definition of success is. And just because we've worked a little bit together, they realize that saying it's about winning is probably the wrong answer, even though there's a part of them that may want to throw that in there. And very often they come up with really great definitions that are more controllable than winning. And so after they share those definitions, because I think, Josh, that can help with the identity, and it can help also get through this part about what's next and not just tie it to one single goal. Then I share with them the John Wooden definition of success. And I think actually for those who are on LinkedIn, Dan Abrahams, the sports psychologist from the UK, shared this recently. I'll paraphrase Wooden's definition, which is, success is peace of mind that you have done everything you could to become the best that you could become, right? You, kind of capital Y-O-U, knowing that you are unique. And many athletes really can identify with that. And that is not a, that I think definition of success reflects that we are all a work in progress, no matter how old you are. There's no finish line here. Just keep going. And so whenever the end of your career is, you want to be able to look back and feel good about how you put in that time to kind of minimize the regrets that you have. So I think that's also a good question to throw into that deeper work that we're doing with players.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a couple of things that can reinforce that are journaling. You know, can a player, you know, use journaling in this way, right? So I think there's different forms of journaling. We've talked about journaling, you know, before a performance, maybe in terms of certain goals or process goals, journaling after a performance, maybe confidence journal as well. I know we've talked about that. And journaling about your why, journaling about your reason for, you know, what you do, journaling about that identity, I think can be really helpful. And I think also with self-talk, can we try to design ourselves, you know, can we first maybe start with awareness around our self-talk, which I think is an important step, but can we try to design, how do I want to talk to myself? How do I want to talk to myself, and how can I connect that to that identity piece, to that why piece, to my purpose? And I think that makes it a lot, you know, I think it makes it more implementable. You know, once we're able to really be clear about, you know, how do I want to be talking to myself out there, and know that things aren't going to necessarily always go smoothly. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be moments where things are going really well and then things aren't going really well. And that's true both within a match and long term, right? Within a career. You know, can I have a plan for how I want to talk to myself? And can I really connect that to some of these other things that we're discussing today in terms of that identity, that reason why, sort of that deeper reason. So I think, and I know we've talked about this particular video in the past, and we can actually link to this. There's a great, it's just about 1 minute long. There's a great video from Aaron Donald. He was playing for the LA Rams, and he was going in, you know, right before a Super Bowl game. and he's mic'd up, so you can hear everything he's saying. He's saying it out loud, so it's not, you know, generally self-talk is within our own heads, but he's saying it out loud, and he's sort of hyping himself up before the game. And, you know, I think it's, first of all, it's a great example of a really elite athlete in a, you know, in as big of a moment as you can imagine, really using self-talk in an intentional way. But what, you know, connected to this conversation, I think it's interesting just sort of how he connects to that, you know, that deeper purpose where he says, you know, he, first of all, he brings up all the training he did. He said, you know, all that training you did, you know, it's for this, you know, this is what you work for. You know, this is what you work for, you know, he brings up other things that are a little bit more maybe instructional, like, all right, like, you know, let's make the big play, controlled aggression. And he brings that up. But I think, you know, a lot of it sort of connects to, you know, this is what you work for. This is why we're playing for these big moments, you know, and sort of reminding himself that he's put in the work, reminding himself that, you know, he's worked hard to be here. He deserves to be here. And I think, you know, self-talk is a really important piece because, you know, we can do the work to be clear about that identity. We, you know, and we certainly should. But I think in the moment, we want to have tools where we can sort of remind ourselves of that identity, remind ourselves why we're doing this, and then be able to sort of access those reasons why we're doing it. And then I think in the moment, it becomes easier to feel motivated, to feel driven, because we have that sort of, you know, reminder of, okay, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm out here today. This is, okay, I'm in the Super Bowl, but it's not by accident. It's because I've, you know, I've worked for years and years and years to get to this point. And here I am, and let's make it happen. I was, there's a football player, a college football player that I work with, and he's a punter. And we talked about this exact thing. You know, he'd been looking for his opportunity to really make a difference, to get out there. And he has his first start coming up. And we talked about this exact topic, this exact topic. It's like, all right, you know, if you're doing the right things, if you're putting in the work, if you're, you know, making the right decisions, and if you're ready, you know, then, you know, you'll get that opportunity eventually. And then it's just about, okay, can I, when I'm in the moment, can I really commit to those habits and behaviors that have helped get me to this point? And I think connecting back to, you know, to why it's important in the first place can be a really helpful tool.
Yeah. And also the identity piece, right? What would a warrior, a fighter, a professional do in this instance? You know, and one of the other lines I like in the Aaron Donald hype speech there is be great, right? Be great today. So it's a way of being. So I love how he thinks about all the work he's done in the past. He thinks about maybe how he wants to play today, like controlled aggression, but also how he wants to be great, be whatever it is that you want to be. And everybody I show this to loves this.
Yep.
And regardless of sport. And like you said, Josh, it's an elite athlete doing this. And one who, you know, has obviously achieved a lot at his particular position with his team. So I think, yeah, self-talk's super important in terms of getting us motivated on a particular day, which is, if we're talking about creating great days and masterpiece days, then that is an important ingredient to motivation. And this is all about that intentionality and how we want to be on that particular day. I think if we go back to looking at some of the more global pieces and looking at goal setting, you know, we've sort of discussed some of the result and outcome pieces as more milestones along the way. And, you know, a potentially useful tool for athletes to do is to create kind of a hierarchy of what their different goals are, so that, let's say, for example, you wanted to become, you know, a much higher level player. So maybe if you're an adult in the US or even in Europe, you want to be like a 5-0 or a 5-5 or something, right? Or if you're a, you know, a younger player, maybe you want to play college, maybe you want to play pro. Our overarching goal is still to become that best player we can be. But then below that might be that big goal. And then, all right, what's below that? And then what's below that? Really then taking it down to, well, what are some of the controllable things I can be working on every day, right? So it's making that connection between that big thing I really want and what I'm doing every day. And I think that that's often where the connections are loose, they don't exist. And it reminds me of Eric Butterack's TEDx talk, where he mentioned that the team goal, like I think it was his sophomore year, was to win the national championship. And at the end of the year, he realized he didn't do all the little things to connect to that goal. Yeah, they had this goal, but he didn't do what was required. But he learned that lesson, and he changed. And I think, you know, for him, if people are familiar with that TEDx talk, his message is more about don't get so hung up on the big goal. For him and others, sometimes having that big goal, maybe being professional, it can be a bit paralyzing as you go along. It seems overwhelming. And so his message was, don't worry about that so much. Worry more about what you're doing day to day. Now, you can contrast that with, say, a Michael Phelps. He has a shorter video about goal setting where big dreams were absolutely a part of what he did. But what did they have in common? Is what they did every day. Michael Phelps was able to make that connection. And maybe it's also because he had a very long relationship with his coach, Bob Bowman, around doing that. But he was able to make that connection between, yes, I want to win X number of gold medals. Here's what I need to do today. And that was there was a strong linkage there. But when you can produce something like a hierarchy, and it can just be on a blank piece of paper with circles and just drawing some lines on there and trying to make that connection for yourself so that you can say, yeah, what I do today, this matters to my important purpose or goal. And so maybe you don't want to have that big goal. Maybe you do. These, I think, are both good videos to watch. The important thing, though, is can you bring about the energy, the intensity, and the motivation on a daily basis so that, you know, you can become that identity, or you can embody that identity, or become that best player you want to be?
Absolutely. And I think you bring up an important point when it comes to Eric Butterack and how you know, some of those big goals can, for some, I think feel daunting or be paralyzing in certain ways. You know, if my goal is to be number one in the world, I think some people interpret that as, okay, if I'm working towards that goal and I'm not there, then somehow I failed, or somehow I'm, exactly, you know, I haven't achieved it. So what does that say about me? So I think being able to break down a big goal, an outcome goal, into smaller pieces, and I like that hierarchy that you brought up, can be really helpful. And I think what's important about doing this work, whether it's goals, whether it's that identity piece, whether it's that purpose and why, is that, you know, during those moments we talked about, everyone has ups and downs, right? Within a match, you know, long term. And I think the more that we've done this work, the more that it can help us in some of those moments of turmoil, moments of panic, after a tough loss, you know, when I'm questioning things about why I'm doing this, you know, if I've done that work, if I've put in that time, if I've thought through these things, I think it becomes a lot easier to navigate and handle those moments, because, you know, ultimately we can put competition and put the sort of value of each match into perspective, right? It's very easy to have sort of a tunnel vision and think of each match or each tournament as maybe more important than it actually is. I think for a lot of athletes, it's very easy to sort of, you know, okay, I have this coming up on Saturday, right? I have this match coming up on Saturday, and it's really important. And, you know, and that's the only thing I can think about. And in that moment, it's sort of tough to really think about how that match fits into the bigger picture in terms of you as an athlete, you as a tennis player, and what is the actual importance of this? Okay, this is a match. This feels important. This has, you know, has an impact on my season or on my future or whatever it may be. But I've played a lot of matches in the past. I will play a lot more matches in the future. I will win and lose plenty more. And, you know, I think, first of all, that I think that sort of a perspective can help us in a number of different ways. It can help us to take some pressure off in one way, certainly. But I think it helps us sort of put the match in its proper place in terms of, okay, this is the actual importance, but ultimately it's not all about this match. This match is one milestone. This match is one quiz or one test on, you know, on that journey. And, you know, and then I have other goals that extend far beyond this match, right? It's like we talked about with the marathon, right? It's okay, I've run that marathon, but this isn't the end. I'm a runner, and that's how I identify. And, you know, that's what do runners do? They continue running after that race. What do tennis players do? Okay, tennis players win and lose matches, and they learn from them, and they grow, and they connect to, you know, some of these deeper aspects of things like we're talking about today, in terms of that purpose and in terms of that identity piece, and in terms of our reasons for why we're doing this and sort of those sources of motivation. And we keep going and we try to improve. And, you know, sort of, I think coming back to something actually from an earlier episode where we had an interview with Christina Rollo and Dave DeHaan, and this concept of everything is practice came up where Christina brought that up, and just talking about how, you know, each time we're out there, it's practice for future opportunities, for future matches, for, you know, okay, this match feels really important. Well, guess what? There will be another match, and then another one, and another one that also feel very similarly. So this is practice for how you're going to handle other situations in the future. So I think having that sort of long-term perspective on things makes it a lot easier to handle those ups and downs. And so does, you know, having done that work ahead of time on our identity, our purpose, our why, what motivates us ultimately. And then I think it helps us handle those ups and downs, but I think it especially helps to prepare us for some of those downs or moments of turmoil.
And one thing we can do to even foster more of that, Josh, is go back to a definition of competitiveness that we have presented in several episodes in the past, of, you know, this sort of three-level priority of, you know, you must enjoy competing, right? Enjoy the act of competing in tennis. You must enjoy tennis. Realize it's a battle, but enjoy that aspect of it. You have to look at competition as a process of learning and improvement, which is what you just were talking about. And then finally, the third piece is you do have to have a strong desire to win. And when we have it in that order, I think it's easier to learn from the sport and stay motivated, because it's not all about winning in this case. It's about doing something I enjoy, learning something about myself, learning about how to do, you know, master this game as much as I can. And then the means to do it is, yes, I have to play to win. I can't play not to lose, etc. You know, there are only a certain number of lessons one can learn through that process. And if you can maintain that order, it can then also assist with motivation, for sure. And we've talked a lot about performance teams, Josh, in the past, and how important that is to mental performance and mental health and the stability of the team. This is also an opportunity to bring in some of the people on your performance team to talk about what your goals are, to talk about planning. So maybe a coach, a sports psych professional, a parent, some trusted advisor that you can review your plan with. And maybe it's just a 90 to 120 day plan, because that's really probably about the most we can really sketch out. But they could look at your overall goal hierarchy. But this is an opportunity to work with and collaborate with somebody else on, you know, what you're working on. If you have a coach, hey, this, you're paying them, right? Let's make sure that you're getting as much out of that relationship as possible. And it can certainly work with, you know, professionals like me and Josh on these types of things to help you as well. So I think, yeah, bringing in your performance team can also be a very helpful way of getting reinvigorated from a motivation perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's an important point. And they can maybe see things slightly differently right? We can be very much in our own heads and sort of running these same sorts of thought patterns over and over again. But maybe someone on that performance team has a different perspective. They likely will. And, you know, and I think being able to open up that conversation about it, and maybe they will share their opinions, or maybe they need to be sort of provoked or asked about it in order to really share and gain that insight. So I think, I think you bring up a really important point there.
So Josh, any more suggestions for strengthening motivation for players who might be struggling in that area at the moment?
I mean, I think one relatively basic thing we can do is we can think back to certain moments where we've felt particularly motivated and other moments where we haven't, where we've maybe felt less motivated or even amotivation, which is, you know, sort of the lowest level here. And can we compare and contrast? Can we really identify what was different between some of these moments? You know, did it have to do with some of those milestones that were maybe coming up or, you know, rapidly approaching? Did it have to do with our lifestyle in terms of, you know, even things like how's my diet and nutrition? You know, am I hydrating myself well? Am I sleeping well? You know, all these things can impact it as well. You know, what did my environment look like in terms of that team around me, in terms of maybe other areas of my life? You know, how well was I practicing? So I think, you know, can we try to compare and contrast some of those moments where we felt our most motivated and our least, and try to really determine what were some of the differences between some of those moments? And I think that can provide us with some more clues as well.
For sure. And I think a lot of what we're talking about here, Josh, is simply being mindful of the concept of motivation. And even just by taking the time to think about it probably helps you to improve it. Because sometimes we get a little bit mindless about these things, about how we train, et cetera, the diet, whatever. And then you just sort of, as an after effect, realize, hey, I'm not doing all these things I could be doing, or I'm not feeling as energized. And simply by bringing attention to the concept and going through some of the things that we've discussed today can certainly help players maybe reinvigorate themselves and bring that intensity to their daily work. Well, that was a great conversation, Josh. Thank you very much. And that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you are enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, and you can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.